Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 716. It's the 21st of February 2016. On the podcast today, I have Executive Chairman, that's the new title, of Asian Met Resources, that's AR's Tony Menini. And new CEO Peter Bird talks about the developments at the company. Plus, also on the podcast, Zeo Andredi, CEO of Wide Sales Group, that's WDC, introduces former Director of Education at Apple, Alan Greenberg, to the position of VP of Wide Academy. Now, Alan worked at, you know, this very senior role at Apple, and when he talks, quite inspirational. And what I'm doing right now, podcasting, I should partly thank Alan, because he was one of the early sort of, promoters of podcasting. And it's quite interesting to listen to, so worth listening to that. Also on the podcast, Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about the following stocks: Free Agent Holdings, that's Free, ticker, Connect Group, CNCT, and Alumas Group, is ALU. Also, today suggested one for your watch list. Now, this is a stock that's suggested by a listener to the podcast. And like I say, nothing on this podcast is intended as investment advice. It's just information you can use to base your research on. Now, today's suggested one for your watch list, because I need one. If you know of a company, by the way, that you think other people should add to their watch list, go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog, and you'll see a question at the bottom there saying, do you know of a company you think should be on other people's watch list? Click that link there, fill in the form, and I will feature it on a future podcast. At the moment, I've run out of suggestions, so I put one of my own in. And I do a blog every weekend on a company I own. And so a mate of mine who does the weekend podcast with me say, do it in audio form, because he can't read. He says he can't read. So this is the audio summary of my blog from the weekend, and I've also put the link to the blog if you want to read it there. But today's company is Savannah Petroleum, SAVP. All right, and I give the reasons why I think you should add it to your watch list in a bit. I also have the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, plus the top 3 most liked RSs on Vox Markets website this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is, I was going to say, CEO of Asian Met Resources. We do have the CEO, but a new one, and also now the chairman. It's Tony Menini and Peter Bird. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. Great to be here, as Thank usual.
You. Yeah, so are you now the chairman, Tony? Is that right?
I'm the executive chairman, Justin. I make that point because I think just from the perspective of the shareholders, listeners and investors, being the executive chairman means that I'll be still actively involved in the business rather than, a non-executive chairman who generally sort of sits away from the business. So I'll be very actively involved going forward in working with Peter on, the continued development of the business. So I make that clear distinction.
Yeah, that's nice to hear, because, you're central to this, and a lot of people, looked at your track record and they have confidence in that going forward with your project at the moment. So it's good to hear that you're still going to be very active and central to the success of Asia Met there. Before we go any further, though, I mean, you are highly followed on Vox Markets and very well known in the junior cap space. but I have new listeners all the time. So just to bring, if someone's listening to this right now, Tony, and thinking, right, what do AsiaMet do? Could you give them a brief summary as to what you're all about, please?
Yeah, so Justin, AsiaMet, as the name suggests, is an Asian-focused copper development company. So we are in Indonesia. We have two core projects, one which we are halfway through feasibility on called BKM in central Kalimantan, Indonesia. That's a the feasibility studies looking at the development of a 25,000 tonne per annum heap leach solvent extraction electrowinning copper project to produce shiny 1 meter squared copper cathode metal. So that project, halfway through feasibility, as I said, going extremely well. A string of, you know, fantastic results that we've put out over the past couple of years, and, you know, continuing in the depth of studies and looking to bring that all together at the back end of this year, and then moving into project financing, project construction, and operations. Sitting behind that on the northern end of Sumatra Island in Aceh Province, we have Butong, which is a very large copper gold project, which is a superb growth option for the company. It has the potential to be, you know, 3 to 4 times the size of BKM in due course, but very complementary in that its lead time is a lot longer than BKM. So near-term production, copper cathode, large growth option in copper, and, you know, looking to actually be in production at a time where the copper market is forecast to really lift off in 2019.
Excellent. Now, it seems to be going very well. The figures coming out from BKM are very good. I had Stephen on recently, who's said it's one of the best projects he's ever worked on, and it keeps getting better, essentially. So that's exciting there. But let's talk about today's announcement. So why the change? Because when I first read this, I thought, what? Tony's stepping back. What's going on here? But that seems that isn't the case, is it?
Oh, look, it's the exact opposite, Justin, really. It's a reflection of where the project's come from and where it is now, where it's going to. So, you know, the headline is strengthening the management team. So, you know, over the last 2 and a bit years that I've been the CEO of AsiaMet, as you well know and as the listeners know, everything we've done sort of everything pretty much on a shoestring. So small amount of money has gone a long way. We're getting to the point where the complexity in terms of the things that need to be managed in the business are growing very significantly. So we're sort of at a bit of an exponential curve, if you like. So the feasibility study, as you know, is now sort of halfway, you know, well underway, getting towards a halfway point. The number of studies and the complexity of the inputs and variables in those studies is increasing every day. At the same time, you know, we're moving into a point where even though we're sort of at a, you know, it's relatively early and people might think it's relatively early from a project financing perspective, you know, we're already starting to engage with banks. We're already starting to engage with financiers for the project. And, you know, the lead time for these are, you know, is essentially 6-9 months at a minimum. So, you know, there's a lot of that work starting to pick up. We've still got, obviously, you know, we've still got a lot of people we're talking to in respect of, you know, project engineering and construction. And, you know, we've still got a lot of permitting. You know, we need a lot of permits. We've got road access. We've got a whole range of different things that we need to address as part of the you know, the ongoing development of the project and the company. So, as I said in the release, you know, that really the intensity and complexity has grown very significantly. We've been doing it with just three main people, Steve, myself, and Mansoor. So the workload has got to the point where, you know, we really need to strengthen and expand our management team. As you know, we're also delisting off the TSXV, and there's quite a lot of work around that piece as well. We're moving the CFO role from Canada You know, we need to get on top of all of that. We've got to move the company secretarial function, and we've got to consolidate our listing sort of on the AIM. So a lot of things going on, Justin. Huge workload, and it's just an appropriate time where, you know, we've always sort of been looking forward to do a couple of things at this particular point in time. One is strengthen the management team, which we've done here today. The other thing is to reshape the board, and I alluded to that in the announcement. You know, we've got a the board skill set as it currently stands is really suitable for or more suited to an exploration stage company. We're a development company now, exploration and development, and you know, we need to basically bring experience and skills to the board to you know, to enable us to achieve the outcomes that we're looking for. So that's the primary reason. As I say, I'm not going anywhere. I'm still a big shareholder, and you know, as you well know, I contributed very substantially to the last raise. And you know, I'm here more to help Pete with the, you know, strategic and investor and the financing side of the business and the operational day-to-day side. I mean, as the listeners know, Steve Hughes, you know, he's very much on top of the country operational issues. But, you know, Peter brings a very, you know, great depth of experience to the team in terms of, you know, the broader operational aspects. So, you know, I've known Pete for many, many years. He's, you know, his experience base in particular, his recent experience is very, very relevant to where we are, and maybe I'll let him talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, yeah, thanks, Tony. So essentially, it's not you're having less focus, you're getting more focused, and it's more complex, so you're breaking down the roles to become a more focused company, going from, like you said, explorer to development company. Peter, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, Justin.
So tell us a bit about your background, Peter, and how you got to know Tony, and what you think of the project there, and what you think you'll bring to it, and what do you think it needs there?
Sure, yeah, thank you for the opportunity to speak. So I suppose, as Tony sort of alluded to, we've known each other for a very long time. Both of us have been involved in the resources industry, both in the Australian context on the domestic front, but also on the international front. We're actually similar age, not that we've mentioned our age. But from a recent experience point of view, I've been heavily involved in making an exploration project, essentially, in recent times, going through the full feasibility process, the funding, and then subsequent initiation and execution of development. So this project, in many ways, is not dissimilar. It has all the normal positives and challenges that these projects have, but it is an incredibly exciting project to work on. And Tony's sort of stolen my thunder a little bit, but there's an incredible amount of very positive work being completed to date. But it's really my role really is to try and assist the guys that are on the team at the moment take it forward by taking a little bit of weight off their respective duties and helping channel and push it through to the next stage. And as Tony said, you know, it's an exciting stage, but it gets more complex now and requires, you know, really heavy input day to day. And to the extent that I can contribute to that, I will, and it did sort of generate significant value for the company going forward. So perhaps, does that sort of answer your question, Justin?
Yes, it does. And I'm sort of reading about your background there, and saying over the last 3 years, you've pretty much been doing with other companies and developing them from, you know, feasibility to financing to development. So you are really ideally placed here at AsiaMet's sort of journey to take them through this stage. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And from a humble point of view, you're correct. But really, it's about coordinating the team, getting all the elements coordinated, taking a significant load to the extent I can off the existing team, who've done an incredible job to get the project where it is with very limited funds and resources. And we're now moving to that sort of exciting stage of completing the feasibility, to the point where we can sit down with the financiers, get the project funded and developed as we move forward.
What's your take on the project here at the moment, Peter? I mean, I don't know how long you've had to look over it. Obviously, you say you've known Tony for a while, but what's your take on this project?
Look, it's a fantastic project. I mean, there's not many projects of this quality around the world. I mean, they're difficult to find. The lead time on all of these projects is a long time, and that work has already been done. And if you take a relatively conservative view about the copper price and demand for copper in particular, it's outstanding. So it's not a mega project, but it's a very good sized project that'll and of course the PEA is out there for people to see, which will generate significant returns for shareholders.
Excellent. Well, lovely to chat to you, Peter, and no doubt we'll chat again in the future, when you've released further news. But as a general rule, Tony, at the moment, the copper market is moving, it seems. There's strikes happening. There's issues with Freeport in Indonesia. Has this renewed or, lifted interest a bit in your project at all?
Oh, yeah, for sure, Justin. So I wasn't a complete lunatic altogether when I was saying these things a year ago. But I've been very consistent in my message that the copper market was sort of at the bottom or near the bottom, tracking on the bottom, and has now sort of come off the bottom. So there's been a fundamental shift, Justin, really has been, in terms of the way the investors and the broader market are thinking about investing in the copper space now. So previously, most people were sitting around and this is sort of all segments of the market and industry thinking, well, you know, I don't know where copper's going to land. Why do I need to do anything now? I'll just wait till, the market sort of gets better. So, and the sentiment has sort of shifted, and it's probably happened about maybe 4 or 5 months ago, where now they're thinking, okay, copper's heading up. Where am I going to get copper exposure? And, companies, corporates are saying, how am I going to grow my business again? And the off-takers are saying, well, we need to secure supply of concentrate. So there's a very definitive shift in sentiment. And, I can honestly tell you the inflow of interest in the company over the last few months is like probably the previous, I've had more in the last 3-4 months than I probably had in the previous 18 months by times 10.
Yeah, wow. That's good then. So, looking forward, obviously you can't say too much, but you alluded in the RNS there that some more maybe board structure changes, and also you're saying you are in talks about financing and all this stuff. And so, are we expect to hear some more news about this in the next few months?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, actually, Peter and I are heading to Indonesia tonight. And we're heading up there, A, to meet up with the team and go, really go through the current status and some planning things, but also to, talk to potential, interested parties who've made contact with us and are interested in having a chat with us. We've also got, had contact from some Asian regional banks who are interested in having a chat. So, we're advancing and, hence the reason, go back to the start with Pete coming on board now, just the number of fronts opening up is, very significantly increasing. So, we need to resource up appropriately to manage and address all of these things. So you'll definitely be hearing more, Justin. The level of activities for AsiaMet's really, it's ramping up for
yeah.
sure.
Excellent stuff. Well, one last thing, Tony. As you know, on the Vox Markets podcast, I always like to ask the people who I interview to give three reasons why someone who isn't following you should hit that follow button on your page, please. So can you give me three reasons, please, Tony?
Well, I'm a man of consistency, Justin. So yeah. It's people. So, we've got the A team on the job. So, we've got some of the best technical people. We've got some of the best operational people in Indonesia. And now we're sort of broadening our management expertise. So, top line A team, projects. You know, I've already sort of been through the projects, but, you know, we've got one of the very few near-term development copper opportunities on the globe. And, you know, it's not very far away, and there's very few projects who are in the position we are. Good scale, good cost structure, you know, very good capital intensity, and, you know, the fundamentals of the BKM project and the timing are absolutely perfect, and which sort of brings me to the third key point, and that's timing. So copper market starting to move. We've actually stuck to the knitting through the tough times when most people have packed up shop. So we've got our project ready to go when the copper market's turning. So that's a, you know, that's, so timing's very important. And, you know, we're just coming out of that long sort of downturn, so fundamentally still very undervalued. So timing-wise, both in terms of project coming on and timing-wise in terms of, you know, still some deep value for investors. So people, projects and timing and value, the key things, Justin.
Excellent, Tony. Good to chat to you as always, and I look forward to chatting to you some more when you release those further updates in the next few weeks or months. Thanks very much, guys. Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Tony. Speak soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Justin. Good to talk.
Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Joe Andredi, CEO of Wide Sales, that's WDC, and also joined by Alan Greenberg, a new appointment there. Alan, thank you for joining me as well, and Joe, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Thank you for having us today.
Well, before we get into chatting to Alan, what's happening there and the exciting news you've just released, first and foremost, what I'd like to do, Jill, is get for everyone who's new to the podcast, people not quite heard of Wide Sales, can you give us a brief summary as to what the business is all about, please?
Yes, of course. So Wide Sales Group, we are a worldwide provider of stem cell services, and we are delivering the world's first end-to-end services solution, which is focused on making stem cell treatments accessible and affordable globally. What this means is that today there are around 3 million people all over the world that paid around £2,000 to store their baby's umbilical cord blood to protect the family against future illness. And they paid around £2,000, but they are mostly unaware that a stem cell treatment can cost up to £300,000, which means the majority will not be able to afford it. And what we have done is develop the world's first stem cell insurance plan to cover all the costs associated with stem cell treatments. Very quickly, what's the importance of a family storing their baby's umbilical cord blood or expecting parents? Well, the audience might have heard about us a bone marrow transplant, which effectively is a stem cell transplant, and it normally performed following high-dose chemotherapy for cancer. And in the 80s, doctors found a better alternative to bone marrow, which is a painful and risky procedure, which is the baby's umbilical cord blood. So the baby's umbilical cord blood contains powerful stem cells that can be used to treat around 80 blood diseases and disorders today, ranging from leukemia, myelomas, and lymphomas, and so on. So it's very important for expecting parents to consider storing their baby's umbilical cord blood and taking out cell plan, the insurance plan, in case they need treatment in the future. But just to finalize the summary on Wide Sales Group, we also have Wide Sales Division, where we'll be able to provide families the possibility of storing their baby's stem cells with us. We are also supporting stem cell research as we are developing our own laboratory at the University of Manchester Innovation Center at the moment. And the other division that we call Wide Academy is where we want to provide accurate scientific and medical information to both healthcare professionals and to potential clients in the generic population on stem cell technology. But we'll discuss that in more detail following Alan's lead today.
Marvellous, yes, I was there. Last week I had my phone there and your RNS popped up on my phone front screen and there was that all-important A word that I saw in the title there and it was Alan. And I'm kidding, was obviously Apple. And that's a very exciting announcement for you. So a former director of education at Apple joins the board to grow a Wide Academy's global presence. So this is quite exciting. Alan, thanks for coming on the podcast, by the way.
Thank you for having us.
Now, so, Jail, explain how this came about, how this happened, and then we'll talk to Alan about his role at Apple, what happened there, and what he hopes to do at Wide Sales.
Well, I met Alan at the one-to-one tech events in London end of last year. And Alan was sitting on the panel, and he was being very insightful. I immediately enjoyed seeing Alan in the sitting on that panel and talking about innovative technologies, especially within the ad tech space. And I immediately saw a potential there for Alan if I could persuade him to join Wide Sales Group and help to lead the Wide Academy efforts. We obviously were introduced that day. We met several times, discussed the possibilities of working together. And then Alan, I think, also followed in love with Wide Sales Group and what we are doing here. And he's now on board to lead the Wide Academy division and to help us to deliver our mission globally.
It sounds like a match made in heaven there. It's almost like a date going on there, you two going out. But but at what point, Alan, did you think, yes, this is a very interesting project, it's one I want to get involved in, and why?
Inside 3 minutes.
Nice. That's speed dating, I think.
No, but it was straightforward. I mean, again, in my world, I'm inspired by young people with vision and passion and commitment. Mm-hmm. And our chief executive has that in abundance. I mean, his biggest problem is he doesn't actually sleep. So we're all on call 24/7, 365. But that's part of the process, part of the exercise. Yeah. But no, hugely ambitious, hugely exciting, and groundbreaking technology. Why would not anybody want to be involved in something like this?
Exactly. And you must have, you know, like I said, working at Apple. In fact, take us through what you did at Apple, please, Alan. And obviously that holds you in good stead, because having that on your CV is amazing. And because very few people know about the inner workings of Apple. But how was it there, and what did you do there?
Well, I'm not about to change the rules of engagement. I think one of the things of working with a company like Apple is being discreet. I mean, it's about the corporate vision rather than the individual. Mm-hmm. But a brief synopsis is my team built a little thing called podcasting. So that came out of HEC Business School and University of Lyon, and is now something that you and many other people are using on a global basis. That led to a little bit of work around something called iTunes U, where the universities of the world are invited to publish in the iTunes portal. There were three of us who were managers globally, led out of a team out of the US, and we developed the first generation of iTunes U universities globally. So I had responsibility for bringing on little institutions like University of Oxford, Cambridge, UCL, Trinity College Dublin, Royal Academy of Music, and the Open University. And I'm proud to say that one or two of those remain the biggest universities featured in the iTunes environment. And that now has over 1 billion downloads globally. So we've created a little bit of chaos, and we've created a little bit of information. Having built a team in Europe, I was then invited by the US to go out to China and spent two very exciting years based in Beijing, basically replicating the program and replicating what we achieved in Europe. Then left Apple the end of 2009, beginning of 2010, and returned to the UK. And today I work with a portfolio of both education and healthcare companies globally.
Do you know what? That is, I feel like giving you a round of applause there, Alan. It's phenomenal. And it's, you know, the striking significance there is that if you hadn't been around, we probably wouldn't, you know, have done that job, what you did there with Apple. We probably wouldn't be chatting now, and I wouldn't have the job I've got now. So the significance is not lost on me.
I would say the exact opposite is true. I think that, I mean, frankly, and I lecture on this subject, I would say to you, any idiot could have done what I did. I just happened to be the idiot it was given to. The fact of the matter is that podcasting was developed and generated, gestated and grown out of advocates, people like your good self, people working in universities and schools who understood the dissemination, distribution of education content and jumped onto that pattern. And I just happened to be riding the roller coaster and holding it together as part of a team, a very talented team at Apple at that point in time.
And you also have modesty to add to that CV, which is very nice. So now moving forward with Wide Sales here, how do you see it going forward, and what's, you know, what is your space here? What will you be doing, or hopefully be doing, with Wide Sales?
Well, I can only thank Jao for the mandate I've been given. I mean, I have the responsibility of helping people understand, lay people understand, the common person understand what the opportunity is with stem cells, how it can affect their lives and the lives of their families going forward, the opportunity to educate professional people to educate the next generation of both doctors and nurses, because if you think about it, practically every GP in practice would not have learnt about stem cells when he or she went through their university and qualified. So there's a responsibility to educate a professional audience and a responsibility to educate the public generally on the opportunities, the challenges, and how health will look perhaps in 10, 20, 50 years' time.
So, Joe, you must be very excited having Alan on board here, because you know, a man of his experience and talent there can open lots of doors, can't they?
Well, we are looking really to develop White Cells Group to a point where globally we will be the go-to place for any healthcare professional looking to know more about stem cells, but also with all the products that we have developed, such as the cell plan and the stem cell storage services and our synthetic bone, and now also being able to support stem cell research companies that are looking for lab space and technical expertise that we have at the University of Manchester. This means that we are touching different areas within the stem cell industry, and we want to become really world leaders in a few years' time. And for that, we'll have several challenges ahead of us. I believe that companies are all about the people, especially at the starts. I think we'll never leave the startup modes, and we need brilliant people that are able to bring to the table their experience and expertise, and all together I think we'll be able to achieve our mission, which is to make stem cell treatments accessible and affordable globally. And this is a very ambitious plan. Whenever I say globally, this is not a cliche, this is really what we're looking for, and for that we need the best. And I really believe that we have an all-star team. There's no boards such as White Cells Group boards within the stem cell industry. That's my belief today. And if you look at each of our directors today, the founder of DenPlan, Dr. Melin Orcherton, to help us develop CellPlan, and now Alan to help us develop White Academy, and Dr. Peter Hollands, which is one of the most renowned stem cell specialists in the world, to help us develop the White Cells division. Myself, that's been around for more than 10 years in this industry, with my co-founder Lopez, who has been involved with Merck for 25 years, and Dr. Graham Hine, our chairman, who is a very successful entrepreneur, and David Bridgeland, vastly experienced CFO. I think we have all the ingredients together with our products, the fact we are a listed company on the main markets, and that we have raised sufficient funding to execute our business plan. So all in all, I couldn't be more excited to have Alan on board. So I feel very fortunate to work with all these people, and I really much looking forward for the next few months where I will be implementing the plans that we are designing together now.
Yeah, well, whenever you're dealing with a cutting-edge sort of technology like this, it is hard to get people's buy-in, you know, people to understand it, how important it is, when it obviously hasn't existed before. So obviously you're building a team to enable that to happen. But what's the sort of next, you know, milestone here in White Cells' journey?
Well, in White Cells' journey, first we have our core product, which is CellPlan. We are about 30 to 45 days away from launching CellPlan in the UK, together with our partner, which is a core blood bank based in Plymouth, BioVault, one of the most accredited core blood banks in the world. We'll be launching CellPlan and offering it to their existing clients, and also to expecting parents that are now facing the decision and the possibility of storing their baby's umbilical cord blood stem cells, and now being able to also take out insurance to cover the costs associated with treatment in the future. So it's the product launch with CellPlan. On the White Cells division, we are also 30 to 45 days, we expect to receiving the license from the Human Tissue Authority, which means we will be able to start offering families in the UK to start with the possibility of storing their baby stem cells with us, which will then start to roll out in Spain, followed by Portugal towards the end of the year. But what I'm really excited about is that White Academy, we had a plan to launch it in 2018. After the floods, we understood that more and more it's important to bring this project ahead of schedule, because White Academy supports our other divisions, and it helps to raise awareness for the stem cell services that we provide. But at the same time, we are able to perhaps educate healthcare professionals and to help them learn more. And for that, we need to develop a content in a way that they are feel attracted to it. And that's why Alan is now on board to be able to help us with developing Wide Academy.
Marvelous stuff. Well, Joe, you know how it works here at Vox Markets. We have an app, and if people put you on their watch list, whenever you release an RNS, they get a notification to the front screen of their phone. And so to get on the watch list, they have to hit the follow button. So could you give three reasons right now why anyone should hit that follow button on your page, please, who are not following you, of course?
Well, we are an innovative company, and if you look at the cell plan business, it's not very different for what DentPlan has done with the UK, with providing dental specialist payment plans and revolutionizing the dental industry, or pet plan, for example. So cell plan, the difference is we can make a difference on a global basis, which is quite unique model that we have developed. It's diverse because we have three synergistic divisions, all of them able to create multiple revenue streams. So we are not a stem cell research company, we are a stem cell services provider. And it's very targeted products we have. We know exactly who the audience is. Most companies are not as fortunate as we are, and we have a very experienced team to execute the plan.
Marvelous, Joe. It's been lovely to chat to you, and you too, Alan. And look forward to chatting to you again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. How are you, Russ? You all right?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. I know you had a weekend away in foreign climes. All go well?
Excuse me, 1 second. Hello? So I'm just recording a podcast. Sorry, guys.
Sorry, can we try again?
That's all right. Yeah, sorry. That's all right. And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. And I know you had a weekend out of this country in a foreign climes there. Was it
nice? Yes, Copenhagen. Yeah, it was absolutely lovely. Thank you very much. Weather was a bit chilly, but the food was fantastic. People were very friendly. Museums were good. And the Carlsberg Brewery was marvellous. Thank you very much.
I can imagine it was. I mean, the last brewery I went to was in Dublin, and the Guinness. And I thought,
been there, done that.
I thought that was fantastic. So, a couple of pints of Guinness afterwards always helps. I like that. They finish the tour and they give you a couple of drinks. So you're bound to enjoy it. You know,
The Danes were much more Nordic about it, much more responsible. A free half litre.
Nice. All right. Okay. So stocks-wise, Russ, what are you looking at? What have you got for this week? What should we look at?
Well, last week we sort of did a bit of one for growth, one for income, one for value. And I've sort of tried to do the same again this week. I can't promise I'll always do it.
Okay.
But for this week, we'll look at Free Agent for growth, Connect for income, and Alamask for what could be a bit of value.
Okay. So Free Agent. What's the ticker there? What do they do, Rich?
It's Free Agent. FREE, and it's nice. Quoted on AIM.
Yeah.
Although we all know there is no such thing as a free lunch, but this is an accounting software specialist. And the reason I've flagged this one is it's a market newbie. It only floated or quoted in November 2016 when the company raised about £8 million for growth purposes. It's got a market cap of about 55 million quid. Mm-hmm. And you think, accounting software. Well, how is a small company going to be able to compete with some of the real behemoths out there? Yeah. But I think that the slight angle that this one has got is that it specializes in helping out sole traders and companies who've got very, very limited small numbers of staff. And one of the great trends that we've seen over the last 5 or 10 years in the UK economy has been more and more people setting up their own business, and there's a lot more entrepreneurial drive out there. And I think the thing that's really important for Free Agent is that at the same time as that trend, you've got Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, bless them, trying to digitalize the UK tax system by 2020. So what this company's software does, it provides real-time tax liability tracking and reporting for busy entrepreneurs, and it's directly linked to their business's bank account. So they get a very, very clear sense of what's required, what's owed, and takes an awful lot of the stress out of it. So it's got about 27,000 customers right now. It does sell directly, but also some of the big accounts, some accountancy firms or small accountancy firms act as resellers for them. And it does seem to be growing very well. So, I think the shares initially had a terrific pop after the float at 84p. They got up to nearly £1.50. They've just pulled back sort of the low 120s, which looks interesting. One of the, you know, you've had a great run, maybe just a little bit of froth and some of the staggers and punters have come out of the stock, and it may now just have a bit of a doze, but I think it'll give people a chance to have a proper look at the company. Its interims in December were fine. It's just announced a deal with Royal Bank of Scotland, interestingly, which, you know, given that RBS isn't exactly flush with cash, is probably quite an achievement. And so you've got a really interesting story here. The big caveat is that it's not forecast to make a profit until 2019, so that may turn a lot of people off straight away. So you are going to have to take a little bit on trust. But the first half numbers, sales were up 36%, and a business with a gross margin of 84%, you know, it won't take an awful lot of incremental revenue for that £1.3 million interim loss to disappear, because operational leverage will start to work in your favour. It does have £5 million of net cash on the balance sheet after the float, so it can withstand those operational losses for a while, but you would like to, you know, you would expect to see those losses come down, providing current momentum in customer wins is continued. So it's an interesting new story. It's got a balance sheet to, you know, it's a classic startup balance sheet. It's P&L and that it's losing money, but it's got the balance sheet to withstand that. And if customer momentum continues, it may just start to surprise people nicely on the upside. But again, it clearly think, as you often get with small companies, if customer growth slows for any reason, then, you know, the share price probably won't take to that very kindly. So it is pretty high risk, high reward stuff. Won't work for everybody, but for growth hunters who are prepared to embrace small cap risk, it's definitely an interesting market newcomer.
Yeah, it's certainly flown since IPO. And but you said that 80-odd% gross margin is fantastic. And on the timeline here at Vox, I just looked at them. The first thing that I see was that they signed that contract with Royal Bank of Scotland, and they're using their software as a solution with its NatWest and Royal Bank of Scotland customers. So that's always nice to have a big company like that sign up with them. It almost validates their model, doesn't it, I suppose? So interesting. Free, it's got. It's a good ticker as well. I always like companies with a good ticker. They're easy to remember, you know? And that's a lot of the... When you're trying to, you know, sort of talk about stocks to people, people often forget what they are. But with a good ticker, it always helps to get a bit of traction in the market. If you've got that ticker, people can remember. So it's, you know, it's maybe a superficial thing, but it does help with marketing, I find, you know, with private investors. So it's free. What's the next one then, Russ?
Connect, which is for income, and it's a much more prosaic story. I mean, people may remember this company as Smith's News. It was spun out of WH Smith's, and I think in the end that the chief executive Mark Cashmore got sick of people saying, "Are you WH Smith?" So, you know, they eventually ditched the Smith's News moniker, and it's Connect, which is ticker CNCT. It's a member of the FTSE Small Cap Index. Market cap £350 million, and it's a distribution specialist. Now, most people certainly won't get excited about a company that distributes and wholesales newspapers and magazines, because as we all know, even allowing for the benefits of things like, you know, adult colouring books or whatever they're called, that is a business that really isn't growing very quickly. And what the company's been doing is very carefully and very slowly taking its skills in logistics and distribution into new areas. So it's now very active in books, which again, I know people might not think is growing that quickly, but you get the odd fillip from things like 50 Shades. But they've also got their online business Wordery, which is going very well. And it's actually acquired a couple of businesses in parcel freight, Pass My Parcel being one. It's got a deal with a firm called Tufnells. And there it actually does business for ASOS.com and Amazon.com on the return side particularly. So it's got three businesses, all the same skills, and it's just slowly reinventing itself. Now, none of them are going to grow wildly. The parcel freight might do. But what you're getting in the meantime, while the company runs these mature businesses very tightly, very cost efficiently, is a dividend yield of 7% that's twice covered by earnings.
Wow.
So for patients, yeah, exactly. So for patient income hunters who are, you know, prepared to take on the trust, the fact that management will keep grinding away at the costs, keep the businesses running nicely, maybe get some growth from parcels and manage the other businesses for cash, you're going to get a juicy dividend yield. They've actually just sold the fourth business of the company, Education and Care, to RM Group. That's knocked £56 million off the debt pile and about £8 million quid off the pension deficit as well. So the balance sheet is pretty good. It's got debt, net debt off the top of my head of about £80 million quid, a pension deficit of about 14. It generates plenty of cash, as you can imagine, given there's not huge amounts of capital investment required. So they're going to use that free cash flow to maybe make the odd selective acquisition. And at the same time, while people are waiting to see, you know, if the business can generate some growth, you're going to get paid these very juicy dividends. Thank you very much indeed. And since it was spun off from WH Smith in 2006, the company's increased its dividend by 10 consecutive years. So you've got about 7% yield. Stock's about 8x earnings. I mean, that reflects the fact you're not going to get terrific earnings growth out of it, but you do have reliable cash flow and what on the face of it looks to be a pretty dependable yield.
Yeah, do you know what? Very interesting chart there. From 2015, it's traded in a range, and really like a roller coaster, gone up and down between sort of 136 and 165, say 170, and we're now at 142. So you think, just wait until it gets to 136 again, and it seems to go up every time.
It's a sort of chart stock that you can see the chart monsters sort of lurking in the shadows, waiting for. Okay, below 140, tick, I'm interested. Yeah. Above 165, yeah, okay. Then I'll, because I guess above 165, then it's trading on a double-digit PE, which for a very low-growth company is probably as much as you'd want to pay anyway. Down below 140, then the yield moves up to sort of 7.5%, you know, sort of 7%, nudges above 7. Again, then you think, actually, you know, I'm prepared to take the low growth on the chin, because I'm getting the great free cash flow. Yeah, it does look to be, as stocks go, a bit of a Chartist delight. Certainly has been for the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, seven times it's gone down to, since 2015, it's gone around 136, 140, and it's bounced back off that. So, you know, who's to say it's not going to change that? Saying that first time you put some money in, it'd probably go below that.
I guess if you are a Chartist, you'll be making sure that there isn't a breakout on the downside just in case. Absolutely.
Okay, and the last one, Russ.
Alomask, it's actually a FTSE fledgling company, market cap of about 60-odd million quid. It's based in Kettering. And this is a bit of a value play in that it's a company that's basically pretty much trying to has reinvented itself and is now, I think, waiting for the market to decide whether it likes what management have done or not. It used to be a bit of a messy engineering conglomerate. Now it's slowly transitioned itself via the final disposal of the legacy businesses last summer into a sort of premium building products player that specializes in things like solar shading, roofs and walls, water management and house building. And its particular area is focus on energy, water conservation, and products that help builders meet increasingly tight building regulations. So I think in that respect, it's not the company that it was, as it were. Now it needs to prove that the company it is one that people want to own. It's only on a PE of 9. It's got a dividend yield of around 4%. There is some earnings growth there in principle. So the valuation looks interesting. The yield looks pretty solid. I think what's holding people back at the moment is there is a 33 million pension deficit in there, which, you know, is a recurring theme with a lot of companies. Though the balance sheet actually has, the net cash is 5 million quid before that pension deficit. Mm-hmm. What you saw in the first half was that sales were up 17% and profits were up just 2%. And I think that was sort of the final, you know, shakedown of the business, as it were. There was investment in there. They've also suffered a hit, as many companies have, from the lower pound. That's increased some of their input costs, particularly on steel. But they've got a 27.5 million quid order backlog. And I think now if management can make this work and start to rebuild margins, you have potentially a cheap stock. But that's your big if, as it were, is can they rebuild those margins? On the face of it, we know the UK house building market looks strong. Supply is continuing to outstrip demand. You know, if they can start to, you know, recoup some of the cost hits on price and operational gearing kicks in, profits, you would like to think, would start to move a lot more quickly than up 2%. And management seemed pretty confident because at least at the first half stage, they nudged the dividend up 6%, even though profits only are up those 2%. So maybe it's one that people can just sit and watch and wait for a little bit more proof, because the multiple's low enough and for them to be prepared to have that chance to wait and have a look. But at the moment, it just seems to be a company that's in transition, and if management can prove that this new strategy is going to work, may just turn out to be one that the patient income hunters might like to tuck away, or certainly do some further research on.
Yeah, and well, they've announced a contract today, actually, worth £5 million. So £5 million to supply bespoke balcony and balustrading systems in the UK. So there we are. So
there you go.
Nice bit of news, and that's why they're up 2.25%, I suppose. Marvellous, Russ. Thanks very much. I'll get those on the website and speak to you next week.
It's a pleasure.
Okay, today's suggested One Fear watch list is Savannah Petroleum, SAVP. It's submitted by me. It's an audio summary of my blog from the weekend. There's a link here, obviously, on the blog post here if you want to click through, and you can see that and read that as well. And it's a more fuller explanation. But what does the company do? So Savannah Petroleum is an AIM-listed Niger-focused oil and gas company focused around two principal assets. It's the R1, R2 and the R3, R4 production sharing contract areas in the Agadir Rift Basin in southeast Niger. So what's the current share price? Currently around 31 pence, 84 million market cap, 274 million shares in issue. What revenue and profit loss did the company generate? No revenue as their exploring stage. For the 6 months period ended the 30th of June 2016, that was the interims, made a loss of $3.5 million. How much cash or debt did the company have? For the 6 months period ended the 30th of June, they had $700,000 in cash in the bank, and they raised $40 million in a placing at 38 pence in July 2016. They have no debt. So three reasons why someone should add this company to their watch list. So reason one, cash. Having acquired 2D and 3D data, they are fully funded to complete a three-well exploration drilling program in the first half of this year. So they're doing that this year. Three drills there. They are targeting 93 million barrels in their Demisa structure, located in the R1 permit area, 37 million barrels in their structure called Bashir, and 35 million barrels in their Kunama structure, both located in R3, that's Bashir and Kunama. Reason two, assets. The Agadim, I'm not even sure if I'm saying that correctly, but the Agadim Rift Basin in southeast Nigeria has a wealth of 2D and 3D seismic data, and large parts of this area has been explored. The previous operator in this area, China National Petroleum Company, or CNPC, drilled 124 exploration wells and made 93 discoveries, unlocking 2P reserve base of 975 million barrels of oil. That is a 75% success rate, so 93 from 124. So even on, super conservative assumption, let's say Savannah Petroleum only achieve a success rate of 1 in 3, that's 33%, right? And they strike success in the lowest of those three areas I just mentioned there, which is the Kunama structure, which is 35 million barrels. This is how it looks. So if you sort of extrapolate that, of course, these are back of the envelope maths, but that's only a 33% success rate in this area that's been highly surveyed by 2D, 3D, and explored before. So if they make $10 profit per barrel, that's worth $350 million profit to them. Now, their break-even is around about $26 per barrel. So at current prices, they can do clear $10, So they'd make $350 million over the life of this one structure. Now, I have no idea of the flow rate, but 35 million barrels of oil would last for 10 years at a flow rate of approximately 10,000 barrels of oil per day. So if they were producing 10,000 barrels of oil per day, making a profit of $10 on each barrel, then it would generate $36.5 million profit every year. If we apply a PE of 10, this would make Savannah's market cap around about $300 million. So their current market cap is $83 million. So you can see, just in this one structure alone, there's potential upside. This is on a really low chance of success. Now, as a reminder, CGG Robinson, the independent resource company, they estimate Savannah's petroleum gross best estimate risk resource or recoverable resources to be around 2.1 billion barrels of oil. So the above profit is only attributable to 60th of their total resources. So you can see, and Andrew Knott said to the CEO in a video, he said this is only a fraction, this structure, these three wells we're drilling is a fraction of what we have in total. So that's reason two. I mean, it's even being very conservative, there's a lot of upside here. Reason three, shareholders. There's some decent, big institutional investors on the share register, including Standard Life, has 9.9%, Fidelity International have 9.69%, Capital Group Companies have 8%, Legal & General have 6.6%, and Henson Global Investors have 4.95%. The shares are tightly held. 64% are either in the hands of major institutions or directors. CEO Andrew Knott holds a decent chunk at 8.81%, which is always a good sign. So whenever I go to invest in a company, I do always look at what the CEO holds as far as stock is concerned. And I'm thinking, if the CEO isn't invested, why should I invest my money? So check it out. I believe one to add to your watch list, Savannah Petroleum. So a news-rich period coming up because they are drilling these three wells soon in the first half this year. And they're expecting to, I suppose, next bit of news, probably drilling contracts, I assume, or maybe a farm-out partner. You never know. So it's SAVP, Savannah Petroleum. Don't forget, it's not investment advice, just information on which to base your research. At the moment, the share price, by the way, is below that 38 pence placing price that happened last July to raise $40 million. Okay, time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Premier African Minerals, Prem. At four, I get this again, Ascent Resources, AST. At three, Vast Resources. At two, Savannah Petroleum, SAVP. And at one, the most followed stock on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours has been Ektek, EQT, which originally was, I think, React, of course. By the way, that Bing you hear, that's because I've got the Vox Markets app, and you can get those RNSs straight to the front screen of your phone whenever a company you follow releases an RNS. So it's worth getting, it's free. And I've got to say, listen, the new app, updated Superfly, super fast, go faster app, is going to be released very soon. And we're going to be beta testing it, and I like it a lot. I've been playing around with it. I've been trying to break it, trying to find bugs in it, and it's looking very good. Okay, top three most liked RNSs on Vox Markets this morning were: at three, Sigma Rock, operational update. At two, Vast Resources, VASD, quarterly production summary and operations update. And number one, the most liked RNS, I had them on the podcast earlier, Asia Met Resources, strengthens board and management. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciatos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.